Do you crave deep and meaningful conversations? The kind of conversations that jazz you up, stretch your mind, and leave you wanting more? Welcome to Suzanne Says, Courageous Conversations about Life and Living. I'm your host, Suzanne Bird Harris, and I talk with friends and colleagues about what lights them up, their fears and flaws, who they've been, who they are, and who they're becoming. You know, the stuff that makes and breaks us. So get comfy. Here we go. Hello, Bill Ellis. How are you this fine Wednesday morning?
Well, yeah, it's somewhere in between. I'm doing fine, thank you. It's great to be with you and see your smiling face.
It is. I've been looking forward to talking to you. I've got a whole bunch of questions ready to fire at you.
Oh boy, yeah.
The first one, though, is, and I've asked this of everybody, I'm thinking I might make it always the first question because I like where it's led so far. And that is, without saying what you do for a living, who is Bill Ellis?
Boy, Bill Ellis is an ongoing experiment in life seeking, he's a seeker. He's seeking knowledge of himself, knowledge of the world, knowledge of his business, knowledge of clients, friends, and just trying to be open to learning and growing and evolving.
And therein lies why I wanted to talk to you so much.
Okay.
I love all those characteristics in people. And yes, so we met 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And happy accidentally around the few days around your birthday that year. And I remember, I don't know that I ever told you this, but, and you may find it hard to believe having known me now for 5 years, but there was a time in my life where it was next to impossible to get me to initiate a conversation with somebody I don't know.
Oh, I can believe that.
And so I find it interesting and kind of cute that the first time you and I spent time together talking and having a conversation was we were at this business conference in Maine, in Portland, Maine, and it was your birthday. And I didn't know that ahead of time, but found out that in conversation that day. And said, well, come on, I'm going to buy you dinner for your birthday. And I'm like, who is this chick saying this to this man?
Oddly, I was thinking the same thing.
I imagine. But I remember being very aware of, you know, I'm an introvert. And I liked that conference because it was a small group of us, like 15. So conference is really kind of a big word to use for that experience. Although
maybe
we
were
a conference related that weekend. But I liked that small group we had and certainly the business topics we were there to discuss and all of that. But I remember being like having this mental conversation with myself going, Just push the words out your face, Suze. Just do it. You're not going to die. Neither will he. And that was my first that I can remember now, because it was that year that I was really consciously working on expanding. When I noticed someone that made me curious, not just walking away with that, well, there was another one, but instead initiating a conversation and finding out about that person. And you, lucky devil, you were one of my guinea pigs where I was learning how to do that. And
actually, just to interrupt, sorry, but I just want to acknowledge that I do think I was the lucky one in that case. So I just want to acknowledge that for reasons we can talk about, but go ahead.
Yeah. So we had a great conversation and, you know, I actually thought there'd be other people that went with us. We certainly tried to get other people to go with them, but you know, it didn't happen that way. It was just you and me. And I have to tell you, you are someone that is very approachable. You I didn't feel, I should have felt nervous given where I was coming from, you know, in my head, but I didn't. And I recall that evening as a really great conversation with a really fascinating person that I am now glad to say I still know and have conversations with.
And, well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
So one of the most fascinating things I learned about you that evening that has really been tickling my brain ever since. And there are a few of them, but this one has been itchy scratchy the most, is your relationship with your wife and the circumstances under which you conduct your life with her and your marriage and your relationship. And without really trying to direct it much more than that, I'd like to ask you to tell me again how you two met and, well, start wherever you want, but how you met and how you conduct things today and some of your, because I remember you shared with me some of your own reservations about how it would work and all of that. So let me shut up and let you talk and tell that story of you and your wife, Tara, and how you met and how you ended up married.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for the open-ended question. I think it's important to say that I was married for a long time, and it was not ideal throughout the marriage. And finally, my then wife and I ended the marriage, after which I had a few different relationships and had gotten into one towards the end of that phase of my life that was rather difficult and was not a good relationship for either this woman nor myself. We both brought some incredible positive attributes to the table, and we both brought some really difficult attributes. I'll just leave it at that. And it got to the point of being very uncomfortable. I'll just say that. And trying to sever that relationship turned out to be harder than I had thought. And I won't go into the details of that, but I need to set that stage because it's very important for me to remind myself of the frame of mind that I was in at that time. So I am a certified Go-Giver coach and speaker through Bob Berg and John David Mann and their brilliant series of the Go-Giver books. And at the time, Bob Berg was hosting business conferences where the old style where they'd have multiple speakers across a couple of days. But that started off with a day specifically for Go-Giver coaches and speakers. And that was in West Palm Beach, Florida. So from St. Louis, I went there. And I went there with a very conscious, very determined attitude that I was going there strictly for business. I wasn't going there for social. I wasn't going there for any type of relationship or encounter or anything like that. And there were, frankly, some people that I knew that would be there that probably in the past I knew had turned my head. But I wasn't going to get into that, both because it wasn't right for me at the time, but also because that relationship seemed to have the NSA in their pocket and pretty much knew what I was doing, which was got kind of frightening. So that sets the stage. I went to this conference. I went to the first day session, went to the welcoming cocktail party by the pool that night. And I'm standing there speaking with our host, Bob Berg, and a few others. And sure enough, coming outside from the hotel, someone turned my head, and I thought to myself, wow, that is quite an attractive woman. And as she kept walking, she stopped, got a glass of wine, came over, and I'm thinking, oh, God, she's coming over here. And my ego is saying, she's coming over here. What will I say? The whole time, she only had an interest in meeting Bob. So she came and joined four or five people in that conversation. She was beautiful. She was brilliant. Very intriguing because she South African with that beautiful accent. And there was a conversation about who had traveled the furthest. this other woman from Australia, or Tara from Dubai, which is where she lives. So I just let that go. The next day at a break, I saw her during the break and we had a few words, nothing really serious. But then we connected via social media and there was some kind of a spark, but we started to communicate via email and some, I guess, maybe Twitter, that kind of thing at the time.
Stop right there. Let me interrupt you for a second. You wrote emails back and forth in that part of the beginning. Was it analogous to before email when we used to write letters? Like, was it that kind of emailing or was it a couple of lines shoot across? Hey, how you doing? Have a great day.
No, great question. And it was, you know, at the time, this was maybe the early days of Skype. I don't recall. But certainly before FaceTime and way before Zoom. So writing was the primary mode for us to communicate effectively and inexpensively. But yeah, the emails were very much more in depth than just a line or two. And that's
truly
kind of
digital letters.
Yes, exactly. They were more, they weren't love letters at the time, but they were relationship focused letters as opposed to some type of exclusively business relationship.
Right.
And then it got to the point of phone calls. And so she had gone back to Dubai, obviously. But we started to realize that there was something there. And one thing about my now current wife, Tara, is she is much like you, adventurous and can be bold and is willing to step outside of her comfort zone when she feels the drive to do so. She does it with some contemplation, not willy-nilly, but she said, I'm going to come to St. Louis. I went, whoa. And she came here. And first of all, I was amazed that she came from Dubai to St. Louis. We met. We were in person for the first time since the conference. And there was indeed a spark. And we enjoyed each other's company immensely. And we got to know each other. And off she went back to Dubai. And we started to realize that there was the chance for something special to go along here. So after a couple of months, we're on the phone and we're talking about the potential of our relationship. And I said things like, I'm still at the tail end of this relationship, which hasn't severed, which will have impact on you, which it did. You are still in an uncertain situation there. You have almost grown children. I've got very young granddaughters. You do this, I do that. You do this, I do that. And she finally said, why are you creating so many roadblocks that don't yet exist? And here's where she got me. I love this and always will love this. And she said, if there are roadblocks, we'll address them as they come up. In the meantime, I invite you on this journey with me and let's see where it takes us.
Oh, I love Tara so very much. I'm going to have to talk to her too. I love so much of that because I too have been the one to traverse miles to see what's possible first. I too would be someone who would listen to, and I don't hear all of what you were saying as, although they are, and that's a perfectly valid interpretation that you were visualizing roadblocks before they,
that's how they were being presented.
Yeah. but I also hear you focusing on what can't work about it rather than what can. And as I recall our first conversation about this, that was something that she pointed out to you rather explicitly as well, you know, in the way she handled you coming up with all that stuff. And, you know, there are many women who would hear that out of a guy and interpret it as, oh, well, he's really not as interested as I am. And I'm really impressed to hear about another woman who thinks like I do. And it's like, no. Problems are always present. That's one of the things we can count on in life. Those are not a reason to not do something.
Yeah. And to be honest, she didn't say, why are you being so negative per se?
No, I get that.
But she was quick to turn the focus onto, let's see where it goes. And what that did was it did turn me to the potential, the acknowledgement that we might stumble along the way and we'll see what happens then when it happens. Mm-hmm. But it also was an invitation. She said, I invite you to go on this journey with me. And at that time, we'd been, you know, this was probably three months into our speaking. And I knew that she had a genuine interest. And I knew that she was checking off so many boxes on my list at the time, unpublished, unquantified.
Yeah.
But suddenly, oh, that's right. That I'd never seen before. So I think there's also this sense of, yeah, there's a better chance of this working out. There's a better probability of us saying yes to each other than it going down the tube.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Where there are some things about her that when you applied thought, you were like, oh, well, gosh, mm-hmm. that she just feels home. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's not really anything you were per se looking for, but once found, it's like smack. Yes, that's for me. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Because I had gone through, in particular, just during and prior to that, some very difficult times, and some times where I did a lot of introspection and self-assessment, which I've been tending to do for a lot of years anyway, but this was a deeper dive with more professional help and guidance. So I didn't really say, here's what I do want, but I really got more, Suzanne, to the point of, what do you like about yourself?
Yeah.
You know, what are you willing, you know, I had to start creating my own boundaries for what I'm willing to do and what I'm not at all willing to do. And had I done that earlier in my life, things would have worked out better. But things happen when they're meant to happen, right? So what they say is good decisions come from experience and experience comes from bad decisions. And, you know, and another phrase I love is we have to go through what we get through to become the person that we are.
I totally believe that. And that is the one thing that keeps me from regret in any form, really, is I really, truly do believe it took every misstep that I made, because I also believe that in the world of duality that we live in, it's really hard to know joy without knowing grief. It's hard to know happy without knowing sad. And a life always on the positive side of that spectrum can feel like it's not worth much because of the lack of contrast.
Yeah, and that's very well said. Part of the reality of it is humans tend to learn more by making a mistake. So if we tell a child, don't put your hand on the stove, it might be hot, they'll go, okay, fine, and then they'll put their hand on the stove. And that's where they'll learn the lesson. So that's a great example. But yeah, we have to take the path and make the actions and take the moves that we do to become who we are. So when it says, when it talks about bad decisions give us good decision making, boy, I'm up on that. I've gone through a lot of that. So that's really helped, because she and I, Tara and I, just to continue that, have been able to come very much in touch with ourselves as individuals and what we want and what we need, and filter into that the ability to be open to the other person's needs, wants, interest, good points, bad points, easy times, difficult times, and say, how do we get through this if it's difficult, and what do we learn from it? Mm-hmm. How do we enjoy where we are if it's the good stuff? And what do we learn from it? So it's, you know, when I said being a seeker earlier, that's pretty much what I think our relationship is built on.
Oh, that absolutely sounds true to me. And we should probably point out for the folks at home that home for you two is two separate places halfway around the world.
Yes. According to Google Maps, 7,512 miles. or right about 11,000 kilometers, take your pick. But, you know, so yeah, she continues to, she is South African, but has lived in Dubai now for 26 years. She owns her own business. She's a brilliant business person. She's a brilliant human being. And she can't just leave her business for multiple reasons. A, it's her creation and she doesn't necessarily want to, but she doesn't want to because she still has obligations that she is committed to helping her, her children, her two now adult children. She has a deep sense of obligation and loyalty to her team members, her employees, and her partner, Louise. So she's not going to just walk away from that. Mm-hmm. I, on the other hand, am a little bit more flexible as far as what I could do traveling. But I, as you know, as you, because you've met them, my twin granddaughters, at the time that Tara and I first met, my twin granddaughters were literally 6 months old. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to miss watching them as much as I had the chance grow up and experience them and be the papa that, that I wanted to be. So there were reasons that we've not gotten together. She still lives in Dubai. I still live in St. Louis. And some people say, oh my God, that's quite a long distance. And so a couple of things, you know, so when I'm talking and I'm talking to men primarily, and they say, yeah, I say, yeah, my wife, she's amazing. She lives in Dubai. And about 80% of them go, she lives in Dubai? How do you do that? You know, like, how can I pull that off? And about 20% of them say the exact same question. And they go, how do you do that? Because they know that a true relationship is built on being together.
Ah.
And part of my answer, yes.
But therein lies the first assumption that is it really true or not?
Yes. Let me give you our answer to that.
Okay.
In my first marriage, I spent a very long time with a woman who's an amazing woman.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out that we weren't necessarily a good married couple, but I spent decades with her in the same room, watching the same movie or TV show or whatever the case might be. And I am closer now with Tara 7,500 miles away than I ever was with my first wife. So yes, is physical proximity important? Sure it is. It absolutely is. Mm-hmm. However, what's really more important is that we're always together spiritually, emotionally, in love, and through the power of the universe.
Mm-hmm. And that's so that, not nearly as airy-fairy as some might interpret that as sounding. Like, it's tangible. I know what you mean about that feeling closer to someone in this moment, despite the fact they're miles, thousands of miles away, than I do another person sitting in this room. Mm-hmm. I get what you're talking about there. And for mm-hmm. me also, that intangible closeness mm-hmm. is more important to me than geographic location.
Yeah.
Not, but with the qualifier that, yes, occasional and regular geographic sameness is definitely important, but it's
absolutely
maker that isn't for me what would make or break a relationship. Like, if I only saw somebody once a year, I have people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You, for one, we're not romantically entwined, but I consider you a close friend and mm-hmm. someone that matters to me. And
yeah.
When was the last time I saw your peepers in person? 2 years ago?
Exactly a year and a half ago, when you were driving through from someplace through St. Louis and you picked up your Girl Scout cookies from those twin granddaughters.
Yes, I did. I remember.
It was brilliant. You know, so yeah, I mean, being physically apart is acceptable if we know that's not going to be the end game. So if I knew full time that she and I would never see each other in person again, I wouldn't lose my love for her, but that would make things very challenging, because that closeness of being together in every way, the full spectrum of intimacy
mm-hmm.
is essential to me and to her for the kind of relationship that we have and that we want.
Let me ask you this before you continue. If you said if you knew you'd never see her again, so that begs the question, Do you guys have an end game where you do eventually end up in the same geographic location, and that this geographic separation is temporary regardless of term?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So two ways to address that. First is in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
What we learned early on was, as best we can within our control, we don't leave each other when we're in person until we know what day or date we're going to see each other again, whether it's me going to Dubai, which I thoroughly love doing, or whether it's her coming to St. Louis, and she adores St. Louis, mm-hmm. which is another thing that shows she's got great taste. So what we are able to do then is to literally count.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll see you in 27 days. And it seems like forever, but the countdown keeps us going forward.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we've really attached ourselves to is a very simple sentiment from another aspect of my life, which is stay in the day.
Mm.
So if I stay in today, I know now that I'm going to see my wife now in 20 days as we're recording this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to stay in that 20 days and know that I love her and that she loves me and that we talk and we Zoom and we're connected and I'm there for her during rough times. I'm there for her during good times. And she's always there for me, good or bad. And that's fabulous. But the other thing, so it's not as specific a countdown,
mm-hmm.
but the eventuality and our joint vision is that eventually she will be able to move here to the States. Because she is, again, in love with me. She's in love with St. Louis. She's more than ready for a change, having lived in Dubai for 26 years, which she loves, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's time for that to change. So, yeah, the plan is, the hope is...
be a grandma when she full time when she comes here.
Well, there's another story there, yeah. we were at dinner a couple of years ago with the girls. I call them the A-team.
Right.
Because it's Abigail, now AJ and Audrey. And we're sitting at a little pizza joint that we love, and they go, "Tara, we have four grandmas." And she goes, "Four?" So yes, my son's mother, my ex-wife, their mother's mother, her mother's remarried. So her new husband's mother. She goes, "Okay." And then he goes, "And you?" And Tara said, "I'm not ready to be a grandmother." So I came up with a nickname that didn't say grandma, but yeah, the girls loved it, and Tara could still do without it, but she loves it. She adores the girls, right. But it's the whole grandma thing. So yeah, we'll end up being together. And in the meantime, we just accept what we have. We stay as all the time. Well, as perfectly as we can, wrapped in gratitude.
Yeah.
Gratitude for what we have. And that's key, is focusing on what we have as opposed to focusing on what we don't have.
That's what I was thinking about listening to you talk about. Yeah. This is, it could be so easy to let the downside get to you, all the ways in which you can't be, like, you can't be there for, be actually here in this moment for each other. But at the 30,000 foot view, if you can maintain the perspective that this is what we can do now,
mm-hmm.
and we can do something different later, and I would far rather do this now than nothing at all,
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
for me would make it much easier to traverse do this for the journey.
Yeah, so we both realize that we're very blessed to have met each other. She absolutely hates the phrase that she's my better half or that I married up, because she says that discounts the gift that I've gotten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're both very appreciative of each other. And what we do have isn't there's nothing in the immediate closeness that would be worth sacrificing that for.
Right, right.
And if it's a matter of not being together all the time, people are apart all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so whether it's across town or halfway around the world, we see each other when we can, and we love each other all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, there's not a functional big difference between someone living in the suburbs and someone living 7,500 miles away. the point is they're not there with you. So yes, it's easier to get to that person in the St. Louis suburbs, takes shorter period of time, and it's less expensive, less logistically easy. But the absolute situation is that distance really only comes into play when you are trying to be together. So
physically, in person together. Yes.
Yeah. So with all the other ways to be together. So does that mean, have you guys come up with a regular time that you talk on the phone or Zoom with each other, or do you, is it always fluctuating because of your schedules? How do you manage the communication part of your
life? A little bit of both. So currently there's a 9-hour time difference. Once daylight saving times ends, there'll be a 10-hour time difference. So the 9-hour time difference actually is a little bit more challenging. But what we do is we use the heck out of WhatsApp as far as messaging. So we will message each other good night when it's their nighttime. I just finished doing that before we started talking, was having a nice message chat with her. So we'll connect that way. We'll say goodnight to each other. We'll say good morning to each other. We always wake up, you know, 99.9% of the time we wake up to a message from the other. And so, yeah, there's a lot of that. Now, we thank God for Zoom. You know, I don't want to thank the pandemic, but the pandemic has opened up the reality of Zoom as a communication platform. There have been some restrictions in different communication platforms on the UAE side through the years. The fact that we can now Zoom helps a lot. And yes, we do try to Zoom every day. Typically, we Zoom in the middle of my late morning, mid to late morning, my time, which is early evening, her time, after she's finished her day's work. And we try to do that every day. We have phone calls when she wakes up in the morning. It's my nighttime, so we speak by phone. And yeah, so we communicate when we can. And so there's a bit of a routine, but it's not as rigid.
I know one of the things that appeals, because, you know, I've talked with you about how I'm trying to discern for myself what elements of a relationship are really super important to me, what characteristics of a relationship I want to create with someone, what's really important to me, and what are the, yeah, we can do it however it works, and what are the, oh, hell no's, you know? And for me, I am, quit laughing at me, Bill.
I'm laughing with you.
I am very much someone who requires a lot of alone time and a lot of freedom to, it's not that I don't want to quote unquote report in or have someone else know exactly where I am and what I'm doing at all times. I have no issue with that. But I think it's more along the lines of the freedom to, because I have ADHD big time, you know, as you can tell in this conversation, I have this thing about starting 17 sentences and not finishing any of them because my brain's going a lot faster than this mouth can move. So in the past, I have felt caged, I think is the best word.
Yeah.
By others' expectations of me and what I can and cannot do now that we're in a relationship. Excuse me? Sit down. You're feeling faint. I can tell. So the idea, you know, for me, listening to how your relationship with Tara works, I'm like, ooh, maybe I should just go traveling halfway around the world and meet me somebody in a really different time zone, because there's a lot about that that doesn't frighten me at all, you know, and, and that's an extreme. I'm not going to go to France or, you know, whatever, but although I have threatened to go to Scotland to find me, because, whew, that Scottish brogue. Oh my God. But anyway, you can find that here in the States too. So I don't have to go that far, but,
Well, the other thing you'll find is that the brogue by itself is not long lasting. So the brogue will, but that doesn't mean the relationship. Yeah,
yes. Yes. That as fuel for the relationship, probably not enough.
Again, Tara is South African. Mm-hmm. So when she first came into that small group poolside, when I was like a high school kid going, oh, what am I going to say? Oh, what if she talks to me? And she was speaking to the group and was speaking to Bob. I mean, so yes, your Scottish brogue, her South African accent was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. It's just mesmerizing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It just adds to the entire attractiveness, her entire attractiveness. And well beyond just physical.
Oh, yeah. I'm always surprised when somebody tells me they like the way I sound when I talk. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't have an accent. And I'm like, I absolutely know I have one. And all of that. But it's funny because it's familiar. It's me.
Yeah.
It's quote unquote normal, not out of the ordinary.
When we meet people, especially here in the States, and they say, oh, I love your accent. She goes, I don't have an accent. You have an accent. Yes. And someone one day says, so is it Tara? And she goes, if you're speaking American, otherwise it's Tara. So yeah, we have some fun with that. And she says, I don't speak English. I speak American, all of which is true. But you know, getting back to, it's not a matter of, had I just flown to Dubai and said, I wonder if there's a woman around here that's right for me. You know, this is what, you know, Bob Berg and John David Mann call the law of left field. This was, I went in with no expectations. I wasn't looking for anything. And you get something totally unexpected in a totally unexpected manner. And that's what happened here. I was at my gym yesterday and I've got a trainer that's making me hurt myself. And he's just finished his second divorce. And he says, well, I understand the third time's the charm. And I said, well, Kevin, maybe so, but my first wife, I was her third husband. That didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
I said, my current wife and I are both on our second marriages, and it's the absolute ideal scenario. So what you need to do, and he knows this, you need to get comfortable with who you are. Mm-hmm. We have to learn to love ourselves first.
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn exactly what you talked about. What do I want? What do I need? Who am I? Do I like me?
Mm-hmm.
Can I love me? How can I grow? What are my shortcomings? And what do I really need from a partnership that's going to complement what I have? Because there are some things that I can be very flexible in and change and do. But what you call the oh hell no's, I refer to as the non-negotiables. So yeah, I like the oh hell no phrase better. But you know, I've come through experience to learn that, you know, just doing things to please the other person doesn't do me any good, and frankly, doesn't do them any good.
No, because if you are trying to mold yourself according to what you perceive their expectations of you are, A, the creature you create is not real. They're not happy because your ability to interpret their perceptions is flawed to begin with, and you're not happy because you're not you anymore.
Yeah.
It's just a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely, 100%. And if the other person or yourself changes the parameters,
yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh wait, I thought this was, you know, I need the bumper guards on a bowling lane. You know,
exactly.
I need to not go too far either way.
And it's not that any of us are static. You and I grow and change all the time. It's constantly happening. But there's a big difference between that growth and evolution and the on-purpose crafting of an identity that you're not even sure the characteristics you're supposed to be adding to it because you're
right.
in trouble discerning what the other one wants. That's worse than building a house on quicksand.
Yeah. Now I'm going to segue this into a little bit of my business, which is built on the premise of branding. And to me, our brand is very simply the value that we provide.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go any deeper than that. It's what value do we provide and whom do we provide it to? Do they want it? Mm-hmm. Do they need it? So when we're building our personal brand or a company brand like yours or any type of business, yeah, we do mold and shape and make decisions and say, I want to do this, I want to do that. but it has to be at the core something we're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be something that is genuine for us.
Yeah.
So if in the business sense, to get this out of just the personal perspective, if in a business sense, I'm trying to attract a certain customer, a certain prospect, a certain segment of business, I can't be inauthentic and try to mold myself to what they are, because first of all, it'll be so easily recognized that it's not authentic. And secondly, it's like telling a lie. How can I keep that up? I mean, eventually I've got an, okay, you're with this way with this customer, this way with this prospect. We have to find out who we are. And then we have to accept others for who they are. And whether it's a business relationship or a personal relationship, and you knew this, Suzanne, is both sides have to be open to realizing that there are other considerations other than just our own. But we also can't say the other person's considerations are 100%. It can't be that either.
Right.
There's some give and take.
Right. I think I have all, since my earliest memories, which I have figured out go back to when I was 3, I have been asking myself questions, like these big grown-up questions in a little 3-year-old girl head.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I? Where did I come from? Where am I going after this? What am I supposed to do while I'm here? All of that stuff is always present. And yet I find it interesting that it's taken me, I'm 57 now. I think it probably took me about 55 years to get to the place where I can truly say, look in the mirror, say, I love you without flinching.
Mm-hmm.
And I would choose myself for my best friend, mm-hmm. for my wife, for my mother. And there's a lot of other roles we play in life, but those are the 3 most important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can actually say that, you know, if I were a guy looking for a woman to spend his life with, I'm a good bet. I'm a good bet mm-hmm. for the right guy, obviously. I'm amazed and astounded at the difference in my daily life just from that change, just from that knowledge. I don't get triggered or upset the way I used to. I'm able to keep an even keel on an astounding number of things that used to send me flying right off the handle before. And I have to believe that, sure, a lot of that likely is the confidence of knowing I'm showing up as who I really am, and I'm not having to do a shuck and jive or worry about a whole bunch of other stuff. I can just be me. But I think we also, if we can show up, shine our light unfiltered out into the world, that's our best shot at attracting the people who are going to help us create a rich and rewarding life. Because it's not that birds of a feather, yes, is involved in that, but so is curiosity. And so is, you know, we all attract people who are not necessarily the same as us in any particular way, but are more, like I get looked at like I'm a zoo animal quite often. I mean the eyebrows knit together when I say something or if I do something that is very Suzanne, I see the eyebrows knit together and I always kind of like, oh, okay, cool. You know, used to be I'd be worried about that, but now it's like a sign of a reminder that, oh yeah, you're being you. That's all right. Keep on.
Yeah. And I applaud you for that. And I understand exactly what you're saying. So when we get that kind of reaction, if we know that we're being genuine and that we're not being in any way offensive or harmful, then that's the other person's fault. If we say something that's just completely out of line and someone gives us that look, hopefully I'm in the position to say, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or maybe that was misinterpreted, mm-hmm. or maybe that was bad timing. So when you talk about 57 years of getting to the point of saying you love you and feeling good about it, I've learned to gauge progress, not perfection.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of my shortcomings still exist. You know, you talk about more often than not, you don't blow off the handle. Well, I still blow off the handle. And there was one time in particular in Dubai with Tara driving through old Dubai, where I was completely lost, that I leapt from the handle and tried to fly. And it got it. Now we laugh about it because it was so ridiculous. And what we said to each other. And so what do we do? We've learned from that. Mm-hmm. And I've flown off the handle since then as well. But I'm much quicker to say, here's your role in that. Right after I say, what is my role in that?
Right.
And do I need to address things? And do I need to at least acknowledge and apologize, if not make amends for my role in things? Mm-hmm. Before I say, well, here's some of the contributing factors. And frankly, I don't even have to ever say, here are some of the contributing factors, unless they're so outlandish. Mm-hmm. And if there's something that's going to be repeated and it's something that really bothers me at a core level, then I have to. Mm. But it better start, in my case, it better start with me saying, here's where I did wrong. Mm. Here's where I behaved poorly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I hate that.
Fun. I give you that.
No,
that whole ability to take ownership of yourself, of your behavior, of your words, your deeds, the whole nine, everything, even the things like I am exploring radical responsibility. And by that, I mean, there are new sentence starting. There are. I believe only four things I have any measure of control over in this life. What I think, much of what I think, not everything, because there are mental health issues that can hijack your brain. But much of what I think I'm in charge of, all of what I say, all of what I do, and how I react to that which I don't control. Those are the four things that if I stray and invest time, energy, and attention beyond those four things, I'm very likely getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. So within the boundaries of those four things, when I look to like the whole flying off the handle thing, my first question almost always is, where's my part in this situation? And whether or not I created the situation, you know, I'm not in charge of the weather. I'm not in charge of catastrophic events. I'm not in charge of you and your thinking, saying, doing, and reacting, but only me. But if I take on responsibility for everything I see and experience, most of it ends up in that number four, in how I react. But my little lizard brain gets what the control it thinks it needs and wants. But the mature me gets to behave in a way that A, doesn't create regret for the future and more work and making amends and all of that for me. But it keeps me very present to where my boundaries are. And that I think without boundaries, I don't think we can be our best selves without boundaries because I just don't think we can. I mean, it's like how to mold Jell-O without a cup, you know, you can't. boundaries are the mold, you know, and we get to choose them for ourselves. Thank goodness. But it's definitely been a 180 shift in how I look at things like boundaries. Before, boundaries always meant restriction to me. Mm-hmm. Today, boundaries mean freedom.
And to add to that, to build on that, boundaries equal freedom. Boundaries also equal respect, both given and received. I respect you enough to tell you what line that if you cross, we're going to have issues that will be very problematic. Putting up a boundary that you don't cross is you showing respect to me and vice versa. So you talk about four things. I have it a little bit simpler in that it's three things. Mm-hmm. And the things that I believe I have any control over are my actions, my reactions, and my attitude. And I wrap that up, and a lot of the people listening may be familiar with the Serenity Prayer. Mm-hmm. You know, give me the serenity, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. What does that mean? It means asking yourself the question, is this something you can truly influence or not?
Mm-hmm.
Courage to change the things I can. If the answer is yes, okay, how do I go about addressing this change? And the most important part is the wisdom to know the difference. So to me, the point is always striving, seeking to become better, seeking to learn, seeking to recognize that action wasn't appropriate, that reaction wasn't appropriate, and it starts with your attitude. You know, I'm able to go every January. I go on a spiritual retreat at a Jesuit retreat house here in St. Louis. It's a beautiful place. And every year I have the chance to speak with one of the Jesuits who I admire their insight and their understanding and their wisdom, their smarts. So I'm telling a priest several years ago, when I was still in the midst of that relationship I mentioned earlier, I'm saying, yeah, so this and this, and I do this and this, and I do this and this, and this happens and that happens. And we're sitting in chairs facing each other, and he leaned over and he put his hand on my hand, which is on my leg, and he says, Bill, God loves you exactly as you are. And my first reaction was to go, phew. And then he continued by saying, he just doesn't want you to stay that way.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I'm going to borrow that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, please do. I share it. I've shared it for years. I mean, it was a gift to me. I'm very happy to share it with others because it's true.
Man, I think they should put that in a card for every new parent.
They should put that in a card for most people most of the time. That should be a mandatory phrase on social media these days.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I mean, it's all about being open to growing. And the one thing, one of the things I also want to talk about, and I'll try to be quick, is you know, trying to find humility, which I for a lot of my life misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
Humility is very simple. Humility is accepting ourselves exactly as we are. If I've got negative traits, I need to look at them and accept them and not say, oh, it's nothing, and minimize it. And I also don't have the right or to say, I'm the worst ever. Neither one of those are true. But what we have to do in tandem with that is accept our gifts and our positives exactly as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's not shuffling off and go, oh, yeah, well, I had a lot of help from people, so it's them. You know, well, what was your role? And it wasn't, yeah, I'm the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's humility is really just accepting at a level of reality, and add to that the understanding and the power that we can grow if we choose to. It is a pretty great way I've found to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as I'm telling you this, I remember way back when I was in starting in second or third grade, my father's in the army. We lived in Germany. He had a plaque on the wall for years that said, we get too soon old and too late smart. And I always wondered about that. And for the past 20 years, I've gone, aha, I know what he meant.
It's that very thing at play when I said, it took me 55 years to be able to look myself in the mirror and say, I love you. It's not that I didn't love myself at all. It wasn't a switch that flipped.
Right.
But it was a culmination of shucking off all the nonsense and paying attention to being purposeful about this life I'm creating for myself. And first, cleaning up some of the mess that I found inside my thinking and my perspectives and things like that, that just are not part of who I want to be. And I do think we get to choose a lot of that.
Yeah. So it's true that some people have what I call a white light experience, where all of a sudden there's this flash and we suddenly have this great insight. And I know a few people that have had that, but most of us, myself included, and you from your comments, we learn from an educational approach. And sometimes education takes a long time. So we get educated by, oh, I tried that. That didn't work. I tried this relationship. That didn't work. I tried to be this person. That, you know, but the key is to keep learning. The key is to keep learning.
Yeah.
Striving to improve, striving to grow, accepting that we're never going to get perfect. I tell my wife that all the time when she says, oh, I should have done better. I said, well, first of all, I hate the word should. You could have done better, but should to me says guilt. I said, but the other thing, here's something I want to remind you. She goes, what's that? I said, you've reached the highest rank as a human you're ever going to, in this world, as you're going to get, and that you're human. You're not going to be perfect. Yeah. Be kind to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a couple questions for you before we go. What is the best thing about your life right now?
The best thing about my life right now is what you have talked about yourself, and that's I've grown to be very comfortable with myself, to like myself, to accept myself, to love myself, realizing that I'm flawed.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Oh, mm-hmm. So what do you struggle with the most in life?
Well, let me build on that first answer, please, because this just jumped in my head. Maybe your ADHD is catching.
maybe.
One of the beautiful things about our relationship and one of the beautiful things I've learned from Tara is she will say things. When I talk about humility, we have to accept our good parts. I struggle with that. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. And she uses this phrase. I'm not making this up. I'm just holding the mirror up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just holding the mirror up so that I get that different perspective, which is great. What do I struggle with most these days? That's a tough question, trying to narrow it down. I honestly don't know how to answer that because what do I struggle with? I struggle with my weight and what I eat and what I don't eat. I sometimes struggle with getting frustrated that my expectations aren't met the way I'd like them to be met, whether they're realistic or not, whether I'm doing the work it would take to have them met or not. So I still struggle with that kind of self-focus of, yeah, but it's me. You know?
Yeah, I can hear you on that one. So
why is it raining when I want to go to the park? This is me. Don't you know it's my time to walk? You know, so yeah, getting caught up in self.
Okay. So what do people constantly misunderstand about you? What is the most common misperception of Bill Ellis?
Well, it's two things, I think, probably an equal tie for different reasons, or maybe the same reason. I think a lot of people think that I am, well, there's some truth to this, but a lot of people think that I am a gruff, curmudgeon-y, unapproachable, hard-ass kind of a guy. And to some degree, that's true because I don't tolerate nonsense very much. And part of that also just comes from my, I'm very quiet. I'm very reserved. Again, back to my trainer yesterday, he goes, are these movements okay for you? And I said, yeah. He goes, you've got a game face. Your expression doesn't change. So I don't overreact necessarily. I'm very stoic. But then the whole thing that's now known as RBF doesn't help, you know. And I'll let you bring that out if you want to on your podcast to explain to the listeners. But yeah, RBF. So yeah, I think a lot of people find me through my own fault, I think, more curmudgeon-y and unapproachable and hard ass than I really am.
We have a term for that in our family here, coined by my oldest son, I think. No, it was Lexi, talking about my mom. And she said something to the effect of, well, I'll probably be crusty like grandma when I get old. So crusty, in the context of what Lexi was talking about there, is all of those descriptors, crusty. And Mom took it as a badge of honor, you know. She's like, yep, I'm a crusty grandma. I would have to refute that whole bit. That is not at all my experience of Bill Ellis. But I am someone who often has reactions that from people that due to RBF also that are wildly inaccurate. And it's because, like you, it's amazing. I can be quiet and reserved. Mm-hmm. I am, but it's mostly when I'm alone. So nobody's a witness to that. When I am lost in thought, my face would make you think that I'm angry or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've cleaned that RBF up so that I now call it resting beast face.
There you go.
Just think it's more appropriate on many levels. But even Tara has told me when we work across from each other at a table, she'll say, I look up sometimes and I know you're just totally into what you're doing, but it looks like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So the other part of that, and I don't know how long you want to go. I've got a little bit more time, but we've talked through our relationship about introvert, extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times I might put that perception out because I am a little bit more closed and a little bit more of an introvert. And by that, what I mean is not that I'm not, I can be as gregarious and outgoing and social and sometimes even charming and sometimes witty. But that's not my default. To do that, I'm expending energy.
Mm-hmm.
So when I refuel my inner cell, it's in a very quiet or one-on-one small group basis. So, you know, if I'm in any kind of a group and, you know, I can get quiet and get that resting beast face just because I'm recharging and because I need that introspection time. And so to me, that defines my introvertness.
Yeah.
And I tell some people that, and I tell some people that, and they go, oh, there's no way you're an introvert. I saw you. Yeah, well,
that's how
for a period of time.
Briggs defines it too. The assessment is it's not about whether you're social or not, or whether you'll talk to people or not, or even whether you enjoy being with people or not. It's what's happening when you're with people to your energy level. And I like mm-hmm. to relate it to, you know, my cell phone battery. When I'm in a large crowd of people, my battery is going very quickly. It mm-hmm. costs me energy and it depletes me quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I have to refuel alone, or like you said, mostly alone, but I have to experience some real recharge in a one-on-one conversation or a small group, mm-hmm. depending on the nature of it and what's going on. But yeah, I think if I had to answer what I perceive to be the most misunderstood thing about me, that would be number two. Number one would be that my curiosity comes across as judgment, not pure, like questions that I ask.
Okay. Yeah.
Across as me being judgy or, and it's rarely ever that. The questions, I'm always looking to learn and understand most. And it may be that I'm so focused on that I'm forgetting to couch my questions in word alerts that would let someone know that I'm not looking to crucify them.
Yeah. And there are some questions I hear that I take as judgmental, and I need to understand that very rarely are people attacking me in their question. But if someone says something to the effect of, why do you do that way?
Mm-hmm.
It might very well be 100% curiosity, but I'll take it like, well, what other way do you want me to do it? What's wrong with the way I do it? You know,
that's a fine example of what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And there's a bunch of things. You know, why are you wearing a blue shirt? Because.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I really have enjoyed this conversation. I wanted to ask about you and Tara's marriage and relationship and how it works, because I'm in the throes of trying to decide, after having been married and divorced twice, and my daughter's father and I didn't get married, but we were together 8 years, and all of that is 16 years in the rear view. And I'm like trying to decide. I've spent a lot of time in those ensuing years working on me, trying to figure out who I am, getting to that place where I say, oh, you're all right, girl. I love you, you know, because I too believe and always heard you can't love anyone else really until you can love yourself.
100%.
And I could talk all day about that. But so now that I'm at this place where I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm flawed, but not perfect. I'm perfectly human. And constantly looking to grow and evolve. So now, do I want to do that on my own the rest of my life? Or do I want to partner up with somebody? And if I elect that I want to do that, what kind of relationship do I want to have? what is important to me, what's not. So I appreciate your candor and sharing your experience, because it helps me just to hear another perspective, because it shakes my assumptions and they need shaken.
Let me say one more thing. And again, this may be running long, so I apologize. But what we're talking about now, you know, I mentioned The Go-Giver before. If your listeners haven't read the book, shame on them. No, seriously, they should read the book. But it delivers five laws of stratospheric success. The fifth law is the one that my clients and friends and myself seem to struggle with the most, and that's the law of receptivity.
Mm-hmm.
Very simply, you know, in order for there to be giving, there has to be receiving, is a paraphrase of that. So we have to be open to receiving, but I've discovered that I've got to be open to receiving without expectation.
Mm-hmm.
So the best example I've come up with that is I walk by a Christmas tree and see some presents under the tree. I might expect, this would be expecting something. Boy, there's a lot of presents there. I bet there's a couple of things in there that are perfect for me. And it's probably that, you know, new PlayStation or whatever that I'm looking for. That's expectation. And we set ourselves up for massive disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Anticipation is, look at all those presents under the tree. It would be nice if one of them's for me. And whatever it is, someone thought enough of me to put a present there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it was when I met Tara. I wasn't looking for anything. I knew I was open to receiving the right relationship. I was open to getting out of a bad relationship that I'd created and accepted. But I didn't go there saying, okay, I'm looking for a beautiful blonde South African who has a business in Dubai that might think I'm okay. You know, it's just we have to be open to then the law of left field. If we know what we are, if we know what's going to make us happy, we just have to be open to when that might appear. And oftentimes it's the biggest surprise we're ever going to get.
Mm-hmm. Often. Wow. Bill, I could talk to you all day, but I'm not going to do that because...
Thank God for your listeners.
Yeah, we have things to do. So thank you very much for sharing your time with me today. And I will end this with the request that I might want to do this again sometime down the road. So.
And I will respond by saying thank you for your hospitality and inviting me and for being open to listening to me go on and on. And I am always open to speaking with you. So all you have to do is get in touch.
Yay! All right. Thanks a bunch, Bill. Have a great day.
I will. Thank you, Suzanne.
If you're hell-bent on wringing every last drop of awesome out of this life and the time you have here, I invite you to visit SuzanneSaysPodcast.com for more conversations and to subscribe. If you'd like to be a guest and have a conversation, email me at letstalk@SuzanneSaysPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.